Welcome back to another episode of Climate Stand with the Final Stand. I, Devanshi Bhatia, and Joshua Joseph will be your host for today's episode. Today, we'll be talking about how environmental problems have affected disabled people and the remedies for them with our special guest, Dr. Sneha Krishnan. Professor Krishnan is an associate professor at Jindal School of Environment and Sustainability. She is trained in psychology, environmental engineering, and disaster management with her multidisciplinary interests ranging from environmental and public health, women's empowerment, humanitarian conflicts, and adaptation. She has worked on a wide range of topics in Asia-Pacific. She has a PhD in environmental engineering from University College London, where she worked communities across South Asia on the recovery of village water and sanitization systems after floods, cyclones, and earthquakes in Assam, Odisha, and Nepal, respectively. Recently, she co-founded a technological startup in India called EDGE, Environment Technology and Community Health Consultancy Services, which applies and advocates for inclusive technology to counter challenges in environmental and community health issues. On a personal level, she continues to explore avenues to apply lifestyle changes and strategies for minimizing plastic consumption, alternate education choices, and subaltern narratives on environmental conservation through creative writing and filmmaking. We warmly welcome you, Professor. Now, my co-host, Joshua, will carry forward with the podcast questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Devanshi. So, Professor, first question is, what is a disability and is there an interrelationship between the environment and disability?
Hi, thank you, Joshua, and thank you, Devanshi, for the wonderful introduction. This is a very tricky question, you know, because disability can be defined in several ways. There could be physical disabilities, there could be mental learning disabilities as well. So we come across a lot of these terms in our day-to-day lives as well. But according to WHO, more than 15% of the world's population actually lives with a disability. It could be around 93 million children who are living with some form of disability, and mostly adults also continue to live with this disability as well, which means that one in seven people actually are considered to be persons living with disability. The challenge of this in the context of environment and in what I teach and what we study and research about is that a person's environment has a huge impact on what they experience, the comfort, the challenges, etc. So it could be the built environment, it could be the natural environment, it could be the urban spaces that we inhabit. So everything either facilitates persons with disabilities experience of living in that place or it creates barriers. These actually limit their participation. For example, let me give you the example of a university campus. So if there are persons who are living with disability are finding it challenging to access classrooms, to access hostels or access mess places where they eat food, this will actually limit how they experience university life as well, right? So therefore, this becomes important to study and think about and research about, because ensuring that everyone participates is one of the key ways in making policies. And therefore, including different forms of disability and understanding how they experience certain places becomes very important in understanding environment and disability. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Professor. How does the climate change disproportionately affect disabled people and exacerbate these vulnerabilities?
This is also a very interesting question, in a way that environment studies often focuses on climate change, because this is something that everyone is concerned about. But I would like to focus on the word vulnerability here. In this context, especially human vulnerability would mean something that the characteristics of a person or a group, which is actually defined by their situation, and it influences the capacity to cope or to react or to respond and even recover from any kind of natural hazard or conflict or displacement. And this is where climate change comes into play. Climate change exacerbates these vulnerabilities because different kind of incidences keep happening regularly. But climate change is just one of the stress factors. There are several other incidences during development itself. Like if we take out climate change from the scenario, even within development, we continue to ignore, continue to blindside what happens to people who live with disability. And that is why I feel vulnerability is a better lens to focus on what happens, what are the experiences of people who live with disability. My research actually focuses on disasters and conflicts, and I have find that people who live with disabilities are actually highly vulnerable, not only because of the event, not only because of the disaster or conflict itself, but also because they've been socially marginalized. So for example, when floods would occur, the responsibility of evacuating a disabled person is left to their carer. So if a child is, say, for example, physically handicapped, then it's either the mother or the father or someone elder in the household who is responsible to evacuate this person. So it becomes very individualized. And if by chance there are no elder members in the household, then the child is left by themselves. So how will they evacuate? What information did they have? Where should they go in case of a flood? What is a safe space? So all these discussions need to happen before the flood happens. So most of the programs, when we try and design and develop them, we want to include all these different people who live with different kinds of vulnerabilities in the community so that their capacities to respond can be enhanced. And that is why I feel that this lens of vulnerability is much more important. I can give you an example as well. When the great earthquake, the triple incidences that happened in Japan in 2011, you would find research which shows that people with physical, mental or intellectual disabilities were twice as likely to die because of the earthquake than the general population, because people with disabilities who managed to reach the evacuation centers, they found that the center itself was inaccessible. So in order to get food or health or different kind of relief supplies, they couldn't access those places as well. And then not having a centralized information place where they can get information on how their particular needs are going to be met. All these actually created a lot of barriers, in particular during the earthquake in Japan. So therefore, these people were forced to abandon these evacuation centers and fend for themselves because the center was actually making it more difficult for them to survive. So therefore, I think climate change and these disaster incidences are quite challenging for people who live with disability. The other way how climate change is also related is because of displacement itself. So when you find how climate change is causing a lot of displacement amongst population, I've recently written about this relationship. We find that people who are disabled are actually more vulnerable to displacement as well, because they don't know where to go. They don't know what facilities will be available there. They don't know how their livelihoods will be supported. So people who live in camps, people who live with host populations, their needs are often ignored by policymakers and practitioners as well. So I think climate change, irrespective of climate change, we need to focus more on what happens to people who live with disabilities. Thank you. I quite rambled there.
That's very informative. So you talked about how there are like policies that need to be implemented to show that, because the disabled people, they themselves are already vulnerable. So there should be some policies. So it's said that like the UNHRC, they've been trying to implement policies themselves. And like during one session in the Human Rights Council, there was this special reporter for the disabled persons called Catalina Devadas Aguilar. So she said that that poverty, discrimination, and stigma were the main elements that influence the impact of climate change on people with disabilities. Why do you think she said that?
The examples that we were discussing so far actually highlight that the day-to-day living of people who live with disabilities is actually quite challenging. Like I said, the example of carers, dependence on carers, especially during evacuation efforts or accessing institutions or spaces or urban areas, everything is built from an ableist perspective, right? So when you and I, we walk around, we have an ableist perspective of living our life in a day-to-day basis. But the challenge is that actually marginalizes this entire section of community who cannot access the places in the same way that we do. They do not experience these places or these spaces the same way that you and I do. And therefore, not only are they marginalized, but they are discriminated against. So when we build places or when we design programs which specifically are ignoring these people's needs, it's actually discriminating them from reaching their full potential. People who live with disabilities does not mean that they cannot have a fulfilling life. So are our workspaces, are our institutions catering to their needs is something that we need to definitely look on. My focus is more on children who live with disabilities, and I have worked with organizations that center children in their work. And we find that they face several barriers. So it could be attitudes. So it's appreciated that you are interested in understanding about a disability in the context of climate change. But are your peers interested about what happens to people who live with disability? Unless and until you have a friend who has some kind of disability, we are never even bothered about what their experiences are. Are they able to access classrooms? Are they able to access hostel spaces? We don't even consider this. So this is an attitudinal problem. Institutional problem is whether the way in which these spaces are designed by the institutions. Are institutions allowing for ramps for people who are in wheelchairs, for example, to access spaces? That becomes an institutional prerogative. Are there spaces for people who live with disability? Are there allowances? So for example, in our university, we'll find that students who face certain challenges do get some extensions, do get support, so that they can perform better in their studies. Similarly, when you try to plan for climate change adaptation programs or disaster relief and recovery programs, you want to make sure that children who have these disabilities get adequate support so that their recovery is helping them meet their potential as well. So I said there are attitudinal, there are institutional barriers, there are also financial barriers. Everything comes at a cost. So to build a ramp, you need additional cost. So for example, my work was looking at water and sanitation systems. So in rural areas, you would often, I don't know if you have seen, but there are usually tube wells in rural areas from where people would get water for their households. You have to actually climb steps to get to the tube well, because usually these places would get submerged in water during floods. So organizations would come and build tube wells at a height so that at least when there is a flood, they can still continue to have water. But this completely alienates people who live with disability. So what if elderly people or what if children with disability want to have water, but they can't access this because there are steps? So then organizations would start encouraging that instead of building steps, we should create a ramp so that it's easier for people with disabilities to access those spaces if they are, for example, in a wheelchair. But everything comes at a cost. So to change any design, to change any program, there is an investment, financial investment, which is needed. So I think that is also a huge barrier. And of course, the last thing is communication. So poverty, discrimination, and stigma can be looked at from an attitude, institution, finance, as well as communication lens. So if we don't communicate with those who are living with this disability, if their voices are not being heard, if they don't have the adequate information of where to get support for, say, buying a wheelchair, or if you have intellectual disabilities, do students know that teachers can help them if they need adequate support to understand it can be in a university, it can be a school. So all these spaces need to be more inclusive is what I think the Human Rights Council was trying to bring attention to. I hope that makes sense.
Yes, Professor, definitely. So, all right. So the next question is, why is there a need for a disability rights approach to climate change?
I think it's not a short-term thing. So people who live with disabilities, it's actually a lifetime and a long-term impact and often intergenerational as well. So if parents are living with disability, it can also influence how their children are experiencing the world as well. So there are long-term physical, mental, intellectual, and sensory challenges in how they interact with these barriers that I just explained about. So that actually hinders or facilitates their participation in different programs around their life. And the other thing that I feel is important to have a disability rights approach is because we are so ableist in our language, in our ways of living, ways of practicing. How many times have we ridiculed someone who may not be handicapped but may face some challenges if we are so loose in the way we use different profanities? I'm really interested in that. Like if somebody is running slow, we make fun of them. If somebody is slow in class in picking up different tough concepts, we ridicule them. So we have a very ableist mindset. And it gets translated into policies and practice as well. So that is how we are unfairly treating people who have disabilities. So we feel that normal is people who are able, and people who are not able, people who are disabled, are the abnormality. But that is not true. Everyone in different ways and forms have certain kind of disabilities as well. Recently, I've been doing some work on ADHD and autism, and I find that people often find themselves to be on a spectrum. And I think this attitudinal barriers need to be challenged. And that is why there is a need for disability rights, because everyone has a right to safe space, right to health, right to justice. So then in order to ensure that irrespective of what they're able or disabled, they should have the bare minimum rights that everyone else has got access to. Thank you.
Do you think there's also any benefit in including disabled persons? Like from what you said, it's a ableist approach that we always look into. So if we include disabled people, what benefit do we get from include disabled people in climate action?
Yes, definitely we should include. I don't think there is any question about that. And the benefits are because we then become more inclusive in how our policies on climate change adaptation and mitigation are prepared and designed and implemented. But I would also like to warn that we should not consider adults and children and those who live with disabilities as homogeneous groups. All their experiences are not uniform. And so, for example, a person who's deaf or blind, or people who live with intellectual or other physical deformities, everyone's experiences are different. So we have to consider each individual as unique. And how they experience life or disability might differ from person to person. Having said that, I also want to introduce this idea of intersectionality. So children from lower caste who are living with disability are further marginalized in society. A woman who is experiencing some kind of disability, their experiences are different. So we have to not only include disabled persons, but also understand the intersectional aspects of vulnerability as well, while we are including them and ensuring that they are able to participate in policies and programs on climate change adaptation. Intersectional would also mean sex, their gender, their identity, their sexual preferences, their orientation, the region that they belong to, the languages that they belong to. Everything adds to the vulnerability of people who live with disabilities. So therefore, we need to have more tools and mechanisms so that we can include them. I don't think even organizations are learned enough, like they're not trained enough to include disabled people, because not everyone is an expert, doesn't understand how to elicit their participation in their programs as well. So organizations are also learning this as we speak. So yes, we should definitely include, but there is more research that needs to be done on how do we understand their vulnerabilities, capacities, how do we ensure that they can participate. If for example, we call a meeting in the high floor of a building, do we thereby eliminate people who have disabilities to come and participate in those meetings? So where we are hosting these meetings also become like an important factor for people who live with disabilities as well. That's what I think.
Thank you, Professor. So like, as you said, all usually what we see is this abled person, like the communities, they always think through an abled person's perspective, basically not through a disabled person or any other. So they basically haven't broadened their views yet. So also when we see through social media itself, the campaigns, it's also looking through a person without any disabilities, like how they approach the climate change itself. So how do we make social, like these social media awareness campaigns more disability inclusive? How do we do that?
I think first is to begin with understanding how is social media including or excluding people with disabilities. So I think technology right now has come far so much that like, for example, phones, you don't have to type, you can speak and access the phone. So similarly, social media can also be enhanced in a way that they meet the experiences and expectations of people who live with disability. So in terms of just using a smartphone or using social media, how that becomes a barrier or an enabler, that is the first layer. And then when we try and design these awareness programs and social media, we do have to look at these different layers of vulnerability that we spoke about in terms of language, in terms of examples, in terms of suggestions, in terms of how people who live with disability are able to relate to the issues as well of climate change, of disasters, of environment mitigation, etc. So I think while we are designing, we have to be inclusive, but also ensure that we are not excluding them through our messaging as well. Because if they find that this is not relevant for them, they might not engage with our messages. I think that's the one that, like, you've seen these examples, no? Sometimes people give photographs on Instagram, and then for people who may not be able to see or understand the images, they actually have caption below where they describe what the photograph is. When we're using platforms such as Zoom or Microsoft Teams, we also enable live captioning so that people who may not be able to follow our discussions, they can actually read out as well. A lot of development has been made in terms of making this experience inclusive for people who may not be able to understand visually. And I think that should percolate even within our education systems as well.
Okay, okay, Professor. Do you think that since climate change is already a prevalent issue, it's been talked about by all global leaders, even Modi during the COP26, and it's a very big issue that needs to be dealt with. And also the topic that we're talking right now about disabled persons and their inclusion into this movement itself. So do you think our government has ever tried to address both these issues together?
By both you mean climate change and disability? And,
yes.
Yeah. I think we still have a long way to go in terms of what we understand and try and ensure for people living with disability in development itself, like irrespective of climate change, how we are ensuring that they get access to social security systems or welfare schemes how they are able to access that, that in itself, we have a long way to go. But also in terms of climate change, in terms of how it affects people with disability and how we can include them more, I think a lot more research needs to be done. How the government can ensure organizations who work with children or work with gender, how they can also include disability in their programs as well. So I think there is still a lot to be desired in terms of these programs and policies. I always feel that we can do more, we can do much, much more. And it's not just the responsibility of the government. I think private actors, universities, research organizations, NGOs, civil society organizations, everyone can do much, much more than what they're currently doing in order to understand disability in context of climate change and environment.
Right.
And I think, I think what you all are doing with this is also one way of addressing that gap as well. So good luck.
Thank you. Like the thing is, this podcast, so that we can let the people know that there's like climate change is not only for like one particular group of people. There are like literally we live in a, what do you say, like very diverse culture. And also, there's also, even in that culture itself, there are different people, right? So we want to make sure that everybody is seen.
Is included. Yeah. Great. Good luck.
Thank you, Professor, for coming. It was really informative to hear your views. We really hope our audience would love to hear about the same. Thank you so much.